Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. Today, we're going to talk about the Voodoo Murders, a series of very violent murders that took place in the early 20th century. And many believe that was a result of a voodoo cult, Brandy. I know you're familiar with cults and voodoo.
Yeah, I am.
So we're going to talk about that. But before we do, let me remind everyone that we are a comedy podcast. We use adult language. If adult language offends you, then
go
you
fuck yourself. That's what you can do.
So
just get
that.
The fuck out of here. Hit the door.
Now, Colonel,
be like that drunk uncle that nobody wants at the house. Just move on out. Hit the door. Hit the street.
Or you could listen to one of the other fine independently produced podcasts out there, like our friend Nina with Already Gone.
Nina cusses a lot, Timmy.
Yeah, but not on the podcast.
Well, she is quite professional on
the
podcast.
Oh, she edits it very well, I guess I should say.
She does edit out her cuss words.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you imagine if we had to edit out the devil's cuss words on this, Timmy?
It would. I mean, what would we have left, really?
I don't think we could get Rick Rubin in here to fix that, Timmy.
We have to call it Elon Musk.
Yeah, we have
to. You're going to call it
But
Elon
what we're talking
Musk?
About.
When we start recording on Mars, devil, things are going to be different.
I accept that. That's fine.
I really want to go to Mars. I really want to go there. Yeah, you know, it's a one-way trip.
There's no way back when you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
People are signing up, though. Okay.
Well, Timmy,
I'm down.
You should put your name on it.
I'm down, Brandy.
What else have you got going on?
Well, we want to give a shout-out to Nathan Hale from the Conspirators podcast. It's an excellent podcast. If you haven't listened to it, I don't know really what you're doing with your life, because it's one of the best podcasts out there.
I don't know him.
He has been – well, he goes by an alias, so – but he has been in had some health problems. So we want to – wish him a speedy recovery and hope that he gets well soon.
That's a very good podcast.
That's fine.
That
I don't know him. So, I mean, I really have to save my thoughts and prayers for people that I know, because I only have
But he's a really good guy. He's a really good guy.
Well, I don't know
so,
him, but that's fine.
You probably do. You just don't know you do.
Maybe. That's the story.
Now, I'm almost certain you do. I'm almost certain you know him, but you don't know him.
So then, based on your word, I will give my thoughts and prayers.
Well, see, the thing is, Brandy, I'm not sure how much. Colonel, do you think that her thoughts and prayers are. Does that really sway God, do you think, Colonel?
Well, I don't know if it sways God. Now, I do know it gets God's attention because it's like that. Well, it's like that cousin that never calls you, and all of a sudden,
you know, win the lottery, and there they are. Yeah.
Well, and you know they want something. I mean, they're drunks, so they need money. They're about to get evicted. They want to move in with you or whatever. That's pretty much, I would think, the devil's relationship with our Savior, Timmy.
Or maybe it's just I don't just dole out my thoughts and prayers like, you know, friggin' Mardi Gras beads. So maybe when I give somebody my thoughts and prayers, maybe God pays attention because, oh, wait. Brandy doesn't ask for too much. What does she need?
Doesn't ask for too much. I have never heard somebody complain about the world like you do, devil.
Oh, motherfucker, please.
Let me introduce our panel. But anyway, we like to wish Nathan a speedy recovery. So let's get into our introductions here because I am joined this morning by two of my favorite people in the world.
Oh.
A woman who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent. Colonel, I know you have a hard time figuring out how she ended up with that moniker.
Well,
I have more than a hard time, Timmy.
Chuck has a hard time trying to figure out how to work a zipper.
Since at all. I mean, if you wanted to call a Brandy the cruel, Brandy the puppy kicker, Brandy the drunk, Brandy the promiscuous,
yeah.
I could get on board with all those.
Okay.
But benevolent? Having a hard time with that one, Timmy.
Well,
seem an apt description of our devil, Timmy.
Well, she rules through terror, Colonel, and perhaps her followers are frightened of her, and so they call her the benevolent. You know, it's kind of like when you call a tall person tiny or...
Yeah, it's like that.
But anyway.
Team Brandy is a cult to me. I think we've seen that.
Yeah, they are a cult. And you know, you can't figure them out. Like, what is it about her that attracts them?
Right.
But a lot of people love her.
Yeah, but, and, you know, there were people, Timmy, that were loyal to Stalin up to the very end. So.
And have you seen the Death of Stalin, the movie The Death of Stalin?
I have not.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. It's a, what was the guy, Brandy, the guy that played in Boardwalk
Empire?
Yeah.
Oh, the guy with the big eyes and jacket.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi?
Yeah, Steve Buscemi. He's in it. And they're like, you know, Stalin dies of a stroke or whatever, but they're like a day later, they're still scared of him. And they're like poking the body, poking his body to make sure he's still dead.
Whatever.
But anyway, let me introduce.
I watched Big Lebowski again the other night, Timmy.
Oh, my God.
You know, I've never seen that.
Take a zero, Smokey. Take a zero.
Yeah, it's very good. Parts of it are very, very good.
Although
you're
I do
about
like
to enter a world of pain, Smokey.
Yeah. What's his name?
I identify with John Goodman very much.
Yeah, I like John Goodman. You know, he is excellent. He was excellent on West Wing.
He was excellent on West Wing.
He was good on that.
He was excellent on a show called Damages, which is an amazing TV show. It's kind of older, but he was amazing on that.
Didn't he play in King Ralph, where he was like
this? We're going to ignore that. He's a much better actor than that.
I like him, though. So, let me introduce the lady who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you, Brandy, if at all?
Well, Timmy, Noah's been off school for almost 2 weeks for spring break.
Are you spending this time worshiping our Savior Jesus Christ?
Well, we went to Gatlinburg for a couple of days and had a good time. But I feel that it's time for my child to go back to school, back to learning. I think that's what's best for everyone. Is if he goes back.
How was your trip to Gatlinburg?
It was
the Great Smoky Mountains.
The Great Smoky Mountains. It was good. I went with I don't know how many of you know this, but I have another brother named Jason, and Jason and I took Noah down there, and we went through the Titanic Museum and the Alcatraz Museum, and we did.
When I think of Middle Tennessee, I don't think of Titanic.
Well, you should.
It just doesn't, you know. Titanic still, more in the North Atlantic somewhere.
Do they still have the Ripley's Believe It or Not / Aquarium down there?
Yes, and we actually had tickets for that, but it was so crowded, like we couldn't.
But
my tickets are good for a year. But no, like we went to the Alcatraz Museum.
See, now Alcatraz, I picture that more like in the San Francisco Bay.
Sure. Yeah. Right. But it's not actually Alcatraz. It's the Alcatraz Museum. And so we went to that, and they had a temporary exhibit there that was like, I got to see Ted Bundy's VW Beetle, and we got to see Bonnie and Clyde's car full of bullet holes.
I saw that when I was a kid.
Yeah, and then they had, I don't remember, there was another car there, but then they had O.J. Simpson's white Bronco.
Wasn't
O.J.'s, it was his friend's, but the Bronco was there. So that was, it was all very, very interesting. It was a good time.
So it was like a criminal museum.
Yeah. It was more like a history of crime and punishment. Museum. And yeah. So we did that, and very interesting. Huh?
I said that does sound cool.
Yeah, it really was. It was really
Bonnie
really
and Clyde's car is something to see.
Yeah, well, Ted Bundy's Beetle was something to see because you just kind of look at it and you're like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Like, eh.
We did an episode on Bonnie and Clyde, remember? Wasn't that
we did.
That was not especially, he did not have, you have the Volkswagen Beetle and it got, Herbie Lovebug really was partly to blame for Ted Bundy's escapades because he said he'd need help and he'd be like, oh, he's got a Herbie the Love Bug. How dangerous could he be?
Exactly. But
didn't he also pretend to be disabled and
he put his arm in a cast, fake
casts and everything.
Yeah, he put his arm in a cast and would act like he
couldn't get his
bike in
there.
I'm surprised we haven't
covered him on the podcast yet.
Well, because he's just been covered and covered and covered and covered. So there's
you're right.
But anyway, the whole thing was really interesting, and there were actually some things in there that there were some people in there that I'd really never heard of, which was something. And then there was some dipshit walking through there, and he's probably 15 or 16, and he's showing his friends. He's like, so look, this, John Wayne Gacy, and he starts going through all these little stupid tidbits about John Wayne Gacy, and I'm sitting there thinking, dude, you're out of your league. Just move along. Read the plaque. Move along. Don't make me step in. Don't make me look at you and tell you you're an idiot in front of your friends. Just kind of
Noah enjoy the crime museum?
Noah did enjoy the crime museum. Yeah, because they had a little, you could do a little treasure hunt. Mm-hmm. And so Uncle Jason, who bought the tickets, we got the thing to do the little treasure hunt and we got the audio tour and all kinds of stuff. So it was fun. It was fun. But now it's time to go back to school. Okay. So anyway, everything's good. Jason wants to come on. Noah's going back to school, which makes everybody happy. And I am 3 days behind on emails. So it's all going according to plan.
When I retired, they disconnected me from the emails at work. I can't look at him anymore.
Well, you don't need
to. That sucks.
Well, I don't need to. I like to see what's going on. All right. Let me introduce Brandy. You talk about these troubled times. And there's one man that people turn to in these troubled times. He's been called an oasis.
It's Dr. Fauci.
He's been called an oasis in the desert.
I'm the Dr. Fauci of love.
He's been called the Dr. Fauci of podcasting.
He's never been called that. First of all, do not sully the good name of Fauci. Do not.
He's a best-selling author. His best-selling book, How to Make Love to a Woman, will be coming out in Braille the first of April.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
We don't want our sightless friends to be any less knowledgeable. So he's come out with his Braille version of this. And I understand that when you get talking about the breasts, Colonel, it kind of comes off the page, if you will. That's what I've heard.
It does, especially in the Braille version, Timmy. Especially in the... do you know that place we have up here? I don't know if you know it, on Hamilton Avenue. It's the Clovenook Home for the Blind.
Yeah.
And sure. One of the ways they supplemented their income was that they were one of the largest Braille printers in the world. They printed all kinds. And do you know what they printed up there, Timmy?
Playboy.
Playboy magazine, Timmy. Playboy magazine.
Well,
because the interviews are so good in there, Timmy. The interviews. Right.
I've never read an interview in Playboy, but I'm sure it's excellent.
Oh, no. Terry Bradshaw had a good one time.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'm going to go make some Irish coffee. Continue as you were.
The very honorable Charles Beauregard Hawkwaters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Well, I'm not good, Timmy.
What's wrong? What's wrong, Colonel?
Sometimes
when you unburden yourself, because Lord knows, Brandy, he has the weight of the world on him. And when he just tries once a week to unburden himself by telling us, some of his troubles, Brandy kind of poo-poos that, Colonel.
Well, she talks about mental health, but she really doesn't care about my problems, Timmy. And Lord knows. So let me tell you what I got going on here today, Timmy. Let me tell you what I'm going to.
All right.
A memorial service, Timmy.
You're going to a memorial service?
For my late father-in-law, Timmy.
Now, does he rate high enough to get a tattoo?
No.
Oh, okay.
And he died a year ago, Timmy. So we're having a memorial service a year after his death.
Of COVID.
This is the same guy, Timmy. If you recall, before he died, we had a celebration of life party for him.
So you had a celebration of life before he died, and now you're
then
celebrating
he died,
his
and
death.
We had the funeral, and now you're we're not having celebrating a memorial his death, but... service a year later.
Why?
Well, I have to dig this sumbitch up and drive a stake through his heart and say he's done for good.
Why?
How long am I going to be? I don't know why people do things. I have no idea.
Is this
it's
a wake?
Your family.
It's her family. It's not my family.
I never knew they
everyone
had...
Everyone in your family's dead.
I never knew they had... everyone they celebrate knows. Your life while you were still alive. I thought that was kind of...
Timmy, it's a goddamn... It's the most bizarre thing you ever seen. You have a guy who's wasted away with cancer and... Now, here's the other thing, Timmy, is the sumbitch lived for 6 months after the celebration of life party.
Oh, that's just rude, Brandy.
Well, I wanted my gift back. I thought, you know what, if you don't go within the 2-month window, you got to give the gifts back.
Did you get your toaster back?
Well, I got him a beer of the month, cheese of the month thing, because I didn't. I didn't figure.
Well, I guess he won't be needing that anymore.
Well, it ran out. I had to pay for it a lot longer than I thought I was going to. Took him 6 months to die, for Christ's sake.
So wait a minute. So you had a celebration of life party while he was alive.
Yep.
Okay, and then he died.
Yep.
And then there was a wake and a funeral.
Yep.
Okay, and now, today, you are having another celebration,
of life. Celebration of death, I suppose. Okay, we're closing the loop. You know, we had the celebration of life, the death.
That's a lot of celebrating for somebody who was a bit of a prick. I have a lot of questions. Is he going to be there? Like, is somebody putting his urn or
I don't know if we're doing a weekend at Bernie's thing where we're going to have him in a chair. I'm not really sure about that, but I do know there will be barbecue and cupcakes. So, you know.
That's, oh well, yeah, duh. You got to go.
But I'm just wondering. You know, I mean, he's just a normal. You know, people like me, they tend to have, you know, like Martin Luther King and presidents. You know, there will be a day. You know, a Colonel Day.
Right.
You know, we get off work because of Colonel Day.
Absolutely not. And no.
I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why there's not one already. To be honest.
Well, no, there should be, but you know, I don't really want to push that because it seems unseemly to me. It seems
it is very unseemly.
Yeah, a little self-absorbed, and you know, I'm not that to me. So
no,
clearly, comparing yourself to Martin Luther King does not. I mean,
that we both
is a clear
had dreams.
Sign that you're not self-absorbed.
He had a dream. I got had a dream. I don't know. You know, me and Martin had.
Yeah,
a
but
lot
your
more
dreams are dead.
I heard that there's already a. They've already made a song that they're ready to release when you pass, Colonel. You know, you remember
like
the
Candle
song
in the Wind.
Yeah.
Now, you remember the song in the '60s?
Yeah.
Abraham,
Bobby,
Martin, and John.
And, yeah.
It's going to be Abraham, Martin, John, and the Colonel.
And the Colonel. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I remember, Timmy. I was standing at the top of Mountaintop one time, Timmy.
Mm-hmm. You weren't.
And I looked across, and it was Rudy because it was really just a hill, but
right.
But I know how Martin Luther King felt to me.
More of just an incline.
It was more of a steep incline. But in that moment, I knew how Martin.
What'd
Luther
you
King felt.
You stepped up on a curb, and there you were.
Because life was a struggle to me.
I understand, Colonel. Well,
all right.
Well, let's get into this story. Since we're about 2 hours and 45 minutes into the podcast, you know, sometimes they've commented that we have too much banter. I don't know. I don't understand it myself.
No, I don't understand it at all. I don't, you know.
But let's talk about the voodoo murders. Because, you know, this is kind of Brandy's wheelhouse. She is. She's known for her voodoo ways.
My love of cults.
Yeah. My groin's still aching, Timmy.
Oh, God. What?
If you could take the pliers off my little Colonel doll you have there, yeah.
Oh.
I would greatly appreciate that.
I don't care. You get nothing.
Show the doctor on the Colonel doll where she hurt you. Oh, that's where she hurt me. The pliers are still attached to it. The vice grips are still on my.
That's Renee.
Colonel Manhood.
That's Renee. Renee did that. Mrs.
Before
Colonel, done with your shit. Go ahead.
Before eventually being accepted as a religion in the United States, voodoo was synonymous with the barbaric practices of the deepest, darkest Africa. And her descendants in the United States and the West Indies. So, you know, speaking of racism, whenever...
You know what voodoo always reminds me of, Timmy?
What?
The Gladys Knight song. He leaving on that midnight train to Georgia, leaving on the midnight train. Voodoo!
Why does it remind you of that?
I don't think voodoo was. I don't think that was part of the lyric.
Oh,
I thought maybe
sake.
That's what they were saying when I was a kid. Voodoo!
Oh, my God.
Whenever strange killings occurred in New Orleans or in the swamps of Florida, it was common practice to blame voodoo. This is especially true when the victims and perpetrators were black. Between 1911 and 1912, voodoo was cited as the root cause of a string of terrible axe murders in Louisiana and Texas. You remember the very first episode that we did together?
The New Orleans axe murders, Timmy.
The axe murder.
Yeah, there's some overlap here.
Every some bitch in the world was getting killed by an axe, by their own axe, and they still was leaving their own wood axe out on the porch.
Yeah.
If you want to take a bite out of crime, hide your axe, because this murderer is showing up unarmed, and he's using your axe.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, there was so many axe murderers back in the day, because, like you said, everyone had an axe.
Everyone had an axe.
Yeah.
Someone had axes to grind, Timmy.
Yes, they did.
The unusual killer was a supposed voodoo priestess.
Priestess?
Yes. Named Clementine Barnabé. Clementine Barnabé ultimately managed to escape into the bayou before meeting the hangman's noose. Oh. But before escaping... from reality
spoiler
into legend.
Alert, spoiler alert.
Right.
Barnabé hinted at something as frightening as it was fantastic. So we're going to tell you about Miss Clementine Barnabé. West of Lafayette, Louisiana, is the city of Crawley. There, on February the 11th, 1911, homicide investigators found the bodies of Walter J. Byers, his wife, and their young son. Judging from the evidence at the crime scene, the unknown assailant had entered the Byers' home from a rear window of a nearby house.
What?
Yeah, there was apparently these two houses. I don't know. I couldn't understand it when I was reading, researching it. But apparently these houses very close together, and they believe they come from one house and crawled into the other. But the other house was located in the black section of the city, or the collared quarter that was called at the time. And, of course, that led investigators to immediately suspect that the killer was also African-American.
Wait a minute. So one house was located?
Yeah, it was like, kind of like
the colored quarter.
Yeah.
But the one house right next to it wasn't?
Yes.
Love all of that. Okay.
And redlining, devil. Haven't you ever heard of redlining?
There's a lot going on here, but that's okay. All right.
Well,
it's like my house, devil. If you go two houses up the street or just right to the top of the street, you're actually in Cheviot. And if you go up to the top of the other street, you're in Green Township.
Okay, right. So, no, I get that.
I live in this, triad of horror that...
Yes, you do. But here's the thing. First of all, that's the west side. But first of all, if the houses are close enough that you can break into the rear window of a house and get to the buyer's house, I mean, they got to be pretty connected there. So what you're saying is that the house that he broke into was in the white neighborhood, but then he crawled over to the other side of the house, and that was the colored quarter.
That is what
That is squirrely as fuck.
Yeah, that's
but
what
go ahead.
Investigators.
Well, you know how gerrymandering is, devil.
I do know. We live in Ohio. Of course, I know how gerrymandering is.
The other house. Okay, so the other house was in the black section or the colored quarter. Bloodletting was not unusual in Crawley, especially in the poor side of town. However, this crime was different. The sleeping Byers family had been brained with an axe. That's actually that, in the that's how they described it in the local paper. They were brained with an axe.
And that is different than bloodletting, where you put leeches on you or whatever. Getting hit in the head with an axe is slightly different.
Well, besides being cruel, the killer also appeared to be brazen. He or she hadn't bothered to hide the murder weapon, as the blood-splattered axe was found dripping gore on the floor inside the buyer's family home. Yeah, in the newspapers, the newspaper articles cited that the bodies were body parts were strewn across the bedroom of the buyers. So they must really, whoever killed him really went to town and hacking him up. Less than
that
2 weeks.
Really going to town when body, when you got body parts. I mean, it's one thing to have a head wound, but it's one thing another to have a head dislocation.
Yeah.
Although the neck is primarily soft tissue, so it's not really hard to behead someone.
Well, less than 2 weeks later, on the morning of February 24th, 1911, Nina Martin's usual morning routine was interrupted, Brandy. At approximately 7 a.m., Nina and her Lafayette, Louisiana home became adjacent to a crime scene when her son, Lesme Felix, burst into the kitchen and said that Nina's sister and brother-in-law had been murdered. Now, being a good sister-in-law, Nina ran over to her sister's house and found that Alexandre Andrus and his wife Mimi, oh, that's a nice name, Mimi, along with their young son, what's that word, Brandy?
No, I'm just going to wait for you to say it.
I don't know, Jock.
Because I'm enjoying it very much.
I don't know what page we're on here.
Two.
Page two.
Joaquin. Yeah. Her young son, Joaquin.
You know what? That might be it.
Yeah.
That might be how you say it.
J-O-A-C-H-I-M. I'm going with Joaquin. Joaquin and daughter Agnes were murdered. Now, see, I don't have any pictures of these, and I'm sure this was probably a child, but Agneses are generally not attractive women, Colonel. Would you agree?
As a rule, no, they're not, Timmy. As a rule, no, they're not.
You know, when that started is when, remember Bewitched? And they had that neighbor named Agnes. Okay.
And then, out, all the Agneses were ugly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure all the women named Agnes appreciate your critique.
I'm guessing we don't have a lot of listeners named Agnes.
No.
I'm guessing.
Not anymore, no.
Right.
Just like with the buyer's case, the murder weapon was an axe, and it was found at the foot of the family's bed. 4 days later, Brandy, this is all happened, if you notice, in a short time period. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes, I noticed. Yep, got it.
All right. 4 days later, the Lafayette Advertiser, which is the newspaper there in Lafayette, Louisiana, short article quoting Deputy Coroner Clark, who asserted that the deceased had been brained with an axe. So here we go again.
Is that the clinical term?
I don't know. That's
brained with an axe.
That's what's in the papers. If you read the papers, Brandy, that's what they say.
Well, and it was somebody fighting him on that? Like, who's he's asserting anything to?
Well, he's the deputy coroner. I mean, unless it was the coroner, I mean, you can't get much higher than the deputy coroner, can you, Colonel?
Well, I believe the coroner, you're a deputy to him. It's like if there were a deputy colonel, which I think we need a deputy colonel because I need a... Becoming a colonel, Timmy, is not as easy as one would think.
Well, but aren't those lieutenant colonels?
Maybe I need a lieutenant colonel, yeah.
You have both.
I need a couple lieutenant colonels because I have fan mail, Timmy, that's stacked up just...
I thought you had an assistant now.
You absolutely do not have fan mail.
Well, my assistant quit, Timmy. My assistant quit.
Because of sexual harassment?
Why
no, it was.
Did you expose yourself?
Come on,
Zoom?
Cuomo. What'd you do? Come on, Cuomo. What'd you do?
He exposed himself.
Well, it turns out that I did not masturbate on Zoom, Timmy. At least
I just
assistant.
Said expose yourself.
He didn't tube in. He didn't do a tube in. He's doing
I didn't
a Cuomo.
Tube him. So, my assistant. Turns out she was Team Brandy, Timmy.
Oh.
Undercover. She was an undercover team. Brandy sent a Team Brandy woman over here to try to figure out. I'm going to try to get this Colonel magic in a bottle.
Yeah. Well, you know, Colonel, in the Army, they hang you for doing, you know.
That's what I actually just wrote my assistant a strongly worded email, which is almost as bad as a hanging.
Did you give did you put her on a performance improvement plan?
No, I sent her on her way. I told her. And then by
her
the, you know, the shame
are no
of it,
longer required.
By this time, Timmy, she had converted and she was a true believer in Team Colonel.
Yeah,
but it was too
late.
She had betrayed me. She came in under false pretenses.
So the deputy coroner is using the very technical term brained with an axe, which makes me so very comfortable with his credentials. Go ahead.
Anyway, the article in the Lafayette Advertiser revealed other shocking facts, some of which were surely provided by Sheriff Louis LaCosta. Namely, the newspaper noted that Andros' family had been killed while they were asleep sometime after midnight. Now, Alexandre...
That's what Eric Clapton meant. After midnight, we gonna let it all hang out. He meant brains, Timmy. He meant brains.
Yeah. No.
People love it when the Colonel sings, Brandy.
Mm-mm.
Alexandre and Mimi had been moved after death, with the killer putting them in a kneeling position beside their bed. They appeared to be praying, which is the first clue that there was some religious aspect to these killings. Now, Sheriff LaCosta...
Why didn't they fall over?
I don't know.
Rigor mortis, devil, don't you know anything about science?
You might have propped him up with pillows or something.
Rigor mortis. You know, since our hearse ride, I've been investigating, and I can't tell. But if you was to have that priapatic disease where you take Viagra and you get a boner for 18 hours. If in fact, Timmy, you died and rigor mortis set in, if you would still have the boner at your funeral.
Nice.
Yeah.
That would make people uncomfortable.
They drain the blood. Well, they would definitely have to keep the one end, you know, shut.
That, well, unless, if you course, could shut it
down by your feet,
you know,
well, right.
In a colonel's case, you might not be able to get that thing all the way shut.
Well, you know, I feel like that is a risk I'm willing to take.
I mean, if you slam real hard, maybe, but that'd bring a corpse back to life. I would.
Yeah,
think.
But you know what? You just cut it off.
That's,
I mean, you're dead. You just cut it off.
It's what they did. Yeah, and you know, ever since they started with this whole penis transplant thing. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm.
You got black market peen?
No, oh, I got mine under guard all the time.
Oh, okay.
I've got a GPS on mine so that if it should get lost. You know, like find your iPhone.
On mine, Timmy.
You know, like find your iPhone. This is, I can
find my penis.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I got Lloyd's of London has insured my penis, Timmy.
Well,
no. Okay, go ahead.
Sheriff LaCosta and his men suspected that the murderer of the family was also the killer of the Byers family, I guess, because
crack detective work. crack detective. A
couple days before, I guess, maybe?
Yeah.
Better yet, Sheriff LaCosta named their primary suspect a recently escaped lunatic named Garcon Godfrey.
Garcon.
Not Gilbert Godfrey, although that would be cool.
Yeah.
Well.
Hey, Garcon.
Garcon.
Yeah. Garcon doesn't seem like a lunatic name to me.
Did they just, like, you know, oh, this guy escaped, it has to be him?
I think they did.
Crack detective work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, if you're an escaped lunatic, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get catch a case if there's some crazy axe murder
murders
running loose.
Yeah.
Garcon.
If there's some antics about, they're going to blame the escaped lunatic.
Now, Colonel, this is down in your neck of the woods, down in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of lunatics down there, escaped and otherwise, to me.
Because it's very hot.
It is
all
hot.
The time.
That's why
and
I think people
muggy.
Kill each other.
It's a bit muggy.
You know, I've never been to New Orleans.
You never been to New Orleans?
No.
Now I'll be serious for a minute.
I thought you went down there a couple years ago, Brandy.
No, I didn't. I didn't end up going.
Okay.
New Orleans is the goddamn most oppressive place you ever been in your whole life.
Because
I mean,
weather?
It really, not the weather. No, there's a and I don't want to offend our listeners down there, but there's a feeling of uneasiness that you get the whole entire time you're in New Orleans. And I've been there maybe three times, and it's like a, you know how people talk about being empaths and, you know, being able to absorb what's around
yes.
them?
Yeah.
Now, I clearly, you know, the Colonel has empathic skills.
Sure.
No.
But it really felt, the best I can describe it is you felt that there was just a darkness around you all the time in New Orleans. That's how I felt,
now,
I really don't.
Did you go
pick
there
up on
during
such things, but,
Katrina?
Yeah,
because that might have been.
Yeah, well, it was
there
right
during
after.
Katrina?
It was the week after Katrina, so maybe yeah, I picked the wrong time. But
maybe.
But no, I really did not like it. I did not like New Orleans. I thought
so
it was.
It might.
I
be
called
you
it
too.
Detroit with funny accents, Timmy.
Wow,
it's yeah.
Okay, so now we've offended people in two major U.S. cities.
Well, no, it's because, you know, so much of the city is now in New Orleans, you know, you didn't have the escape of, you know, manufacturing and all that. But everything seems decaying in New Orleans. To me, it's old and it seems decaying, and I just didn't like. And plus, you know, in New Orleans, it's, you go down to French Quarter, but, you know, we had to go down there when I was in college, and it would tell you. You know, you get in the French Quarter and walk down the wrong street, you're liable to end up with pieces of you chopped off.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's what happened.
By an axe.
Because they had those voodoo
people.
That's
what happened to the Byers
family. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't mean to badmouth New Orleans. I just did not like it. It was hot, muggy, and it
bad juju
felt like the presence
saying.
Of ghosts was around you all the time to me.
No,
well, they probably were.
And don't they bury people above ground down there?
Yes.
They do, because the water table is not.
Yeah, so sea level is below sea level, right?
Yeah.
All right, so the next
killing.
And
they stack them six at a time. I mean, people are stacked on top of each other. Huh. You know, devil, if we lived in New Orleans, there would be a chance that they would bury me right on top of you, devil.
There's never that chance.
Yeah.
Never.
That will be your eternal punishment, devil. Well, of course, mine.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Nope.
That would be karmic justice for the universe.
It would not.
But the next killing occurred just outside of New Orleans. On March 22nd, 1911, Louis Cassaway, his wife, and their three children. Do you like how I name these victims and I never name the wife? It's just his wife and three children.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because back in those days, they were basically... people thought of them as chattel, Timmy.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't vote, so they didn't have to have identification, so they didn't need names. You could just say wife.
Oh, my God.
Follow the logic on that.
The Cassaway family suffered the same awful fate as the Andres and Byers family. They were mercilessly bludgeoned to death with an axe.
Brained, I would say.
Yeah.
You think they were brained?
Well, this is outside Louisiana, so maybe they have a different term it. A different technical term.
As with the murder of the Cassaway family, seemed to the previous crimes, there are some major differences that caught investigators by surprise. And Brandy is going to tell you about some of those differences.
Now, do you think there were people down there, Timmy, at this point, you know, as the devil so eloquently put it in the beginning of our show, that we need to do something? Do you think people were rising up for axe control down there, Timmy?
Maybe. I mean,
there's a whole axe control movement. They wanted to dull the edges or make them heavier. The one thing that doesn't mix, I mean, there's a couple things in this world.
I mean, because technically the Constitution doesn't say it says you have the right. Second Amendment says you have the right to bear arms, right? It doesn't say firearms.
No.
Yeah, I mean, can't you just wear a T-shirt?
Well, you know, I always find this a bit ironic.
Bear
to
arms,
me, but
come on.
In Ohio, I have a concealed carry, as many people do.
From Virginia.
And from Virginia, yeah. It's a bootleg one, but it works in Ohio. But anyway, I'm prohibited from carrying a folding knife over 4 inches, and brass knuckles, Timmy.
Well.
But you can carry a gun. Now, doesn't the right to bear arms mean that, well, you know, I'm the colonel. I just need brass knuckles. I can take care of a gang of eight.
That's my weapon of choice.
Knuckles. Yeah.
Brass knuckles?
Yeah.
But you can't have them. They're illegal, Timmy. Wow. They're illegal to even possess. I can't even have them in my house.
I hide them in my purse. I have a special purse. Okay.
But I can have a shot. I can walk around like Yosemite Sam with a shotgun, but I can't have brass knuckles.
That's
the law
amazing.
Makes no sense. It confuses me, Timmy.
So
it's a confusing world to the colonel sometimes.
It's not easy being you.
It's not easy being me, Timmy.
First of all, the Cassaway family lived in San Antonio, Texas, not Louisiana.
Right.
So, second, while the previous victims had been black, one of the victims in this case, Mrs. Cassaway, was white. This fact initially convinced detectives that a hatred of mixed-race couples was at the root of this awful crime. What the hell? All of them were black except for this one white lady. And now it's just, he must have a thing against mixed-race couples. What?
You know, that'd have to be hard to be a mixed-race couple back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for sure. But how do you come to that conclusion when you just have this one white lady? Give me a break.
I don't know why you are
it's crack detective work.
You're questioning Sheriff LaCosta because...
Oh, I am. And I'm going to continue because he clearly is a fucking hot mess. So after the murder of the Castaways, Sheriff LaCosta had a new suspect in the form of Raymond Barnabé was a petty criminal and sharecropper who lived in Lafayette. So obviously it's him, because when you're a petty criminal and a sharecropper,
oh, and don't
you
forget,
dive
he's
right
black.
Into axe murder.
He's black.
Oh, yeah.
It's a trifecta.
So, yeah, Raymond had a long rap sheet and was known to have a violent temper. The case against Raymond broke wide open when his mistress, approached police and told them...
Bitches be testifying.
Yeah, that Raymond had confessed to committing murders during one of their frequent quarrels. Who just shouts something like that out when you're fighting with somebody? Like, you're fighting with someone. You don't want to give them secrets. Dumbass.
Well, they probably shared it with them when they were making love.
Sometimes, well, this says quarrels.
Well, sometimes, you know,
I hate that.
Some people are talking, Timmy. Some people are talkers. And you never know what's going to come out of somebody's mouth when they are. Especially if you're doing it right, Timmy. And it throws a passion.
I don't care how mad I ever get. If Dave and I are fighting, I'm not just going to bust out with, and I killed someone with an axe. And then just, you know, because why would, what, are you kidding me? Why would I
well,
do that?
See, because you've never been in the whole throes of, I mean, you get in there and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm going to tear you up. Like I tear up those people with the axe before last week.
Yeah, no, that's just
see,
stupid.
That's how that happens. And then, you know, the person is sitting there thinking like, what the fuck is he, what? Did he just say he was going to split me with an axe or something? I don't know.
Brain.
Yeah, because you know women will be taking mental notes when you confess to shit.
And then the bitches be
especially
testifying,
murder,
Timmy.
And then bitches be testifying. In the autumn of 1911, Raymond Barnabé stood trial in Louisiana for the murders of three whole families. Zephyrin and Clementine Barnabé, Raymond's own children, testified against their father. While on the witness stand, fucking rat bastard kids, Clementine told a graphic story about how her father came home one night covered in blood. Clementine's brother, Zephyrin, seconded this story and went one step further by claiming that Raymond had announced one night, oh my God, that he had killed the whole damn Andrus family.
Well, see,
what
I mean, kids,
the actual
kids.
Fuck?
Kids be testifying. You better be careful what you say around Noah.
Oh, yeah. He can put me away forever. Noah but, be testifying. You know, the point is, this motherfucker, like, first of all, let's pretend that this is all bullshit for just a second. Like, he's just telling every swinging dick he runs into, yeah, I murdered these three families. Yeah, I murdered them. I did it. I'll do it to you, and I murdered them. And you, fucking hell, who does that? But people do, and they're dumb, so I'm going to keep reading. Then, as now, it was highly unusual for children to testify against their parents. However, Clementine and Zephyrin justified their actions by claiming that they were terrified of their father.
Well, I guess it was an axe murderer.
Sure. Well, it was better for everyone if Raymond, a lifelong criminal, was just behind bars. So in October of 1911, a Louisiana jury convicted him of murder. This conviction would not last to the end of October, but Raymond would remain confined until November of 1911. He was let go because another murder proved his innocence. Oh! And on October 27th, 1911, Raymond Barnabé was granted a new trial. The reason for this decision was threefold. I love Raymond. Raymond had been drunk throughout the earlier trial, thus calling his testimony into question. Sure. the jury had failed to follow.
Now, that's a legal strategy you have tried on occasion, isn't it, Devil? Just show up trashed.
I try it on every occasion.
Yeah.
I try it on every occasion, anytime I'm on trial. The jury had failed to follow the judge's instructions during deliberation, and the prosecution had never bothered to offer a motive for the murders. So while Raymond languished in the Lafayette Parish Jail, police in Lafayette stumbled upon a new crime scene. Just tripped right over it. On November 27, 1911, the bodies of Norbert Randall, his wife Azima, and the four children were found murdered inside their cabin.
I was able to find his wife's name on this one.
Yes. It's nice. They were found murdered inside their cabin located on Lafayette Street. Like the others, 8-year-old Albert Sissy. What? Albert. That's just what it is. Albert, 6-year-old Renee, 5-year-old Norbert Jr., and 2-year-old Agnes, another Agnes, had been beaten to death with the blunt side of an axe. Norbert
with the blunt
had been shot
side
in the head.
That just seems cruel.
Norbert had been shot in the head before he too was brained with an axe.
I'm seeing this pattern here of the being brained with an axe.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's crazy. As per usual, the murder weapon was found at the crime scene, although police discovered that this axe had been partially washed. The horrific slaying of the Randall family sent the citizens of Lafayette into a panic. Rumors circulated that the Randall children had been mutilated by their killer. Because of this, well over 150 people met at the Good Hope Baptist Church in Lafayette. The meeting reminded citizens to sleep with weapons nearby.
Which is probably part of the problem.
Right. Who doesn't really sleep with weapons nearby?
You can make anything into a weapon if you do it right. It also demanded action from the police. So, dipshit Magoo up there, who's
what I can never understand, Timmy.
Sheriff LaCosta, don't besearch his good name.
Oh, I'm besearching it. Because he just can't help but point to random people. It's like people pass him on the street, and he's like, oh, it's that guy. It's that guy right there.
I think this is a cautionary tale, Timmy, of people sleeping naked.
What happened to the lunatic? Do what, Colonel?
You should never sleep naked. Because when an axe murderer comes to your house, Timmy, how are you going to wrestle with an axe murderer naked?
Well,
I suppose you do it the same way you would with shorts on.
It's a bit
awkward. If you got shorts on, it changes the whole dynamic.
Well, so
because
the
then you're not stumbling over your penis. You know what that's like to me.
No,
you try to go
and
then you're
so
face down on the floor
because
you tripped over your penis.
Naked, mm-hmm. Wait a minute. So if you're sleeping naked and somebody breaks in, do you say, hang on, let me get some shorts on. I'll be right with you.
Well,
no, that's why
you
say
they've already taken
an
axe to your penis.
Well,
yeah,
whatever.
He's saying
all
don't
right.
sleep naked. That's how the Romans used to fight. They fought naked.
Well, good for them.
Yeah,
good.
That
they
seems
could,
a little.
Did they sword fight?
Yeah.
Okay, so. All right, so they saw all these people go to the Good Hope Baptist Church, and, they tell them to sleep with weapons nearby, and they're telling the police, get your shit together. But the good, God-fearing people of Lafayette thought that the police should look at other members of the Barnabé family.
Do you think when they were naming that church, anybody threw in the Hopeless Baptist Church?
No, they don't tend to do
instead
that.
Instead of the Good Hope. I mean, it's... So, they always have these very cheerful names for churches.
Here's the other thing. This is
they don't say the Hopeless Church.
It's kind of like toilet paper. I mean, you get Charmin and Angel Soft. You never get Scrape or Rocky toilet
yeah.
paper.
Screech
sandpaper.
Toilet paper. Yeah.
All right. So police go back to the Barnabé family home in search of new evidence.
Pulp toilet paper.
I don't know why they did this, because the guy's already in a pokey
Well, first of all, did they Pokey? Do it in the first place? I mean, did they search it in the first place, or did they just go to pick this guy up and they dead to rights.
The people at the church was encouraging the police to go and get some more evidence on this guy who's been in jail when this other murder takes place. I mean, it makes no sense.
No, but they're black and they're poor. Look at other members.
I know.
So
I got it.
Look at it. It may not be him.
Right.
But let's. What about his second cousin? Why don't you go find that guy?
What happened to the escaped lunatic?
They dropped him. I don't. Oh, Garcon.
Oh yeah, Garcon.
They dropped him.
Garcon.
Yeah. They dropped him. He evidently was too crazy to commit this stuff or whatever. I don't know. So anyway, so the police go, fine. And so they go back to the Barnabay family home, and they find several sets of bloody clothes that belong to 17-year-old Clementine.
Clementine.
Oh, what? So the specific objects of horror include a suit of women's clothing covered in blood and brain matter.
That's incriminating.
It's a little bit. And blood was also found on the door leading to Clementine's room. Well, how about that? Hmm. Although, and I feel like she should have cleaned that up by then. Like, come on now.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Month and a half later. Hard to clean up brain matter.
No, it's not. Throw it away. Throw the clothes away. Why are you hanging on to clothes covered in blood and brain matter? Throw them the fuck away. Set them on fire. It's 1911. The forensics aren't there yet. You know, anything. And there's blood found on the door. You didn't look at that and go, you know, I should put some Clorox on that maybe and get that right out so that it doesn't look, you know, what the fuck?
Did they have Clorox in 1911?
Whatever.
Colonel, Lysa, check that out. Write that down. Write that down. Use. See when Clorox was invented.
Well,
write that
and
down.
Of course, few believed that that a 17-year-old woman could carry out such gruesome crimes. So Clementine was arrested and sent to the same Lafayette Parish jail as her father, Raymond.
Oh, the family that slays together stays together.
Duh. I've got that stitched on a pillow. While both Raymond and Clementine languished in jail, a killer used a blood-hungry axe.
Do you like how
be blood hungry?
That is some writing now. Blood hungry axe, Timmy.
Yeah, thanks, Colonel. Could they be? Can axes be pancake hungry? I mean,
I was trying to paint a picture.
Well, but you gave the axe a very human quality. So anyway, so the axe evidently wanted to snuff out another family. And in January of 1912, the Broussard family of Lake Charles, Louisiana, fit the bill. Father Felix, his wife, and their three children were ambushed by a mad killer.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, what if it's just the axe all along?
I'm going back to the lunatic guy. What happened to
It's blood hungry.
Garcon.
Garcon. Maybe
you know he got all kind of pussy, Colonel. When he used his name, you know, women just they think you got a French sounding name. They just take.
Yeah, I'm Garcon. I am Garcon.
Not really.
Nice to meet you.
So
you know, on his Tinder app, scene, you know, Garcon, he's probably picking up babes left and right. Just saying.
Oh my God.
He doesn't have to be attractive with that name. You don't even have to be attractive.
No, you don't. You don't. It's like that little skunk, Pepe. Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, but did you know that they're banning Pepe Le Pew?
I know they are.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Pepe was a little enthusiastic.
No, here's the thing. I get Pepe Le Pew is rapey. I really do. What I don't get, and it was the same with Mr. Potato Head and whatever else, and these Dr. Seuss books, who gives a shit? Just do whatever you're going to do and don't say anything. And then there's not the controversy because people don't pay fucking attention. So if you want to take the Mr. or Mrs. off the Potato Head box, who gives a fuck? Just do it. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit until you make a big deal about it and sit there and say, well, do you have, you know, inclusivity and blah, blah, blah. Okay, I mean, just, I get it. I do. I get what they're doing. I support it. But, you know, we don't need to make it into a whole thing. You don't want to put Rapey Pepe Le Pew in any future Space Jam movie? Who gives a shit?
Was Pepe slated to be in the Space Jam movie?
I don't know. Somebody should contact his agent. But, you know, Pepe does not get yet less rapey if you go back and watch the old Warner Brothers cartoons. But he wasn't the main character in the fucking first Space Jam movie. So just fucking make, you know, say he's roadkill at this point, if you choose to address it, and move the fuck forward. Say he got stabbed by a woman that he wouldn't get out of her face and she kept trying to kiss her. I don't give a shit. But nobody cares that Pepe Le Pew is not going to be in there. It doesn't fucking matter. Pepe Le Pew has been rapey since 1974.
Is that when he showed up on the scene?
I don't know, but that's when
I was born. He showed up in 1974?
I have no idea if that's the year I was born, and that's the year that I remember, you know, that's all I got. But he has been rapey for that long. The fact that we're addressing it right this second is just, it's an eye roll. It's just do it and move on.
I'm going to miss his accent. He was a cute little guy.
Well,
about this whole thing is how did every episode the cat get accidentally painted with a white stripe?
I don't know. Every episode. The same way the coyote always managed to run off a cliff in every episode.
I think it's time to cancel Wile E. Coyote myself.
Well, but he's done wonders for the Acme Company. All right, so.
But how many children you think were injured? How many children you think suffered serious injuries trying to lift a piano over that doorway?
Well, or painting a tunnel and
painting, a tunnel. That worked sometimes and didn't work the other times.
Let me tell you something. Being a Gen Xer that watched this, we absolutely tried to jump off our roof or, you know, paint shit on the side of the house and have our brother run through it. I mean, there were all kinds of things. But you know what? We didn't whine about it. We got the fuck back up, had our arm set by the doctor, got the cast on, and moved the fuck forward.
You got to go to a doctor?
You know, Gen X is fine.
I didn't get to go to no doctor.
Only if it was broken. If it was just a sprain. I mean, once it starts coming through the skin, you kind of need to go see somebody professional. Otherwise, you just tape that shit together and move the fuck on. Put a Band-Aid on it.
Well, you know, Timmy.
You know, my mother's favorite thing, you know, can you walk on it? Then you're fine.
I had the two boys, Logan and Taylor, out. They were out on the sidewalk, and they was going to have a race, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And Logan had his Razor scooter, and Taylor had a skateboard. They were racing down to the end of the street and back up to the telephone pole. So I see Logan flying up the street, back up the street, with his Razor scooter and Taylor's helmet, skateboard helmet, in his hand. And I said, well, where is Taylor? And Logan said, well, he wrecked down there, so hold on, I gotta touch the pole first, and then I'll tell you about it. And he's like, yeah, he tried to bump me on my Razor scooter, and he fell down and, you know, rolled down the hill. And I said, okay, so Taylor came back.
He left him to die.
Yeah, he did leave him to die because he had to touch a telephone pole to win the race. Now, my Taylor comes back, and he's telling me his wrist hurts, you know, and I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. We'll put some ice on it. You'll be fine. Well, now, remember, Taylor is my best, you know, I'm coaching his baseball team, and he's my best player, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's my catcher, too. And he's telling me how much it hurts to catch a ball. And I was like, well, of course
it does.
You're a fucking
cheer mom. That's what you are.
I was like, you know.
You're a fucking cheer mom.
It hurts because you sprained your wrist. You know, we'll just wrap it up and you'll do whatever and, you know, keep going on.
It'll be fine.
So
right.
He played three games for me, Timmy, and he did all right. He complained a lot about his wrist, and I told him, you know, I one time played a game with my pinky finger dangling off. So, you know, you'll be fine.
Oh,
so we took him to a wellness check at the doctor, Timmy. And upon that wellness check, they asked him if everything was okay, and he said his wrist had been bothering him, and they x-rayed him, and he did, in fact, have a broken wrist. So it made his mother feel very bad. It made me feel bad because I lost my best hitter and my catcher.
Right.
But and she wouldn't let me continue to use him. But, yeah, sometimes, you know, I raised my kids to be survivors.
I did that with Jacob. He stubbed his toe on something, and I'm like, just put some ice on it. You're fine. He kept saying, but it really hurts. I'm like, just put some ice on it. Jesus, quit whining. Well, he finally bitched so much, I took him to the doctor, and they x-rayed it. And, of course, he had broken not just his toe, but he had broken it, like up at the root of the toe. Ooh. Yeah, so I'm like, feck.
Not much they can do about a broken toe already.
No, but, you know, you have to wear a boot so that you don't bend it all the time. I mean, that kind of shit. So, I mean, it was – but, yes, I felt really bad because, I mean, we went – this one – I mean, I waited like a week because I'm like, I'm not taking you to the doctor.
Yeah, Taylor's was like 3 weeks.
Stubbed your toe. Yeah.
Yeah. And, then I wasn't allowed to use him.
To be wonderful parents.
Well, here's the thing, Timmy. The poor little kid would come to the game – in his uniform and everything else with this cast on his wrist, and I was forbidden by his mother from using him. But he was my best player. Mm-hmm. So, Timmy, I get down in these, you know, these games of the six innings, and I get down to the bottom of the sixth, and I got a runner on third, right? And I'm thinking, Now, I've already sworn to his mother that I would not put him in a game because he broke it on a growth plate. He wasn't even allowed to pick up a glass of milk. But I had a runner on third, and I had an idea, and I thought, Taylor, come here, son. Taylor knew how to.
You got a runner on third. What else are you going to do?
He knew how to do a delayed steal. So I said, Taylor, what's going to, you know, I want you to just, you know, do your delayed steal. When that catcher throws the ball back to the pitcher, you just break for home. Because all I needed was somebody to score and the game was over. But I did give him specific instructions that if they catch on to this, don't slide. Just let them tag you.
Right.
You know, go ahead. And he, it was successful and he won the game in quite dramatic fashion, Timmy. And he didn't get his uniform dirty and I swore him to secrecy. And everything was fine, right? Well, what I did not think is that... you know, Logan had games, too, and some of the kids on Taylor's team had brothers on Logan's team. And when she went to Logan's game, the moms all told him about how, you know, Taylor's heroics in the last inning of my game. And I got in quite a bit of trouble for that, Timmy.
I love that story. All right, so this crime scene.
I mean, in all fairness, Brandy, he does have two other sons.
I know, so he's got...
Well, that's what I used to tell the twins all the time. I would always tell Taylor, you know, I have one just like... Actually, not just like you. I have one better than you. I mean, you are basically, you know, the defective version of the twins. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you're throwaway.
Something happens to you, I just got to protect Tanner better.
This crime scene was the most shocking of all. It not only suggested that Louisiana was the home of a crazed serial killer... Murderer, sorry, but also a serial murderer who happened to know a thing or two about the occult. The murdered Broussard children had their blood drained into buckets left at the head of their beds.
Oh,
a message.
See, I'm channeling. I'm trying to make this more professional. So I'm trying
to
channel.
To be Ed McMahon?
The guy from Dateline, Keith Morrison. Oh,
first of all, you cannot. His name should not even. Don't even put his name on your lips, at all. Keith Morrison, get the fuck out of here.
Brandon likes Keith Morrison. Oh,
I do like Keith Morrison. All right, so there was a message written in blood, on one of the home's walls, and it read. When he maketh the inquisition for blood, he forgetteth not the cry of the humble. For decades, this inscription.
Now that's a psalm. That's Psalm 9:12, right there.
Good. Since it's written there, I don't have to worry about you just making shit up because it's right
no,
there.
No, it's Psalm 9:12. I know my good book, right, devil. I know my good book.
This chapter and verse.
You don't know shit from apple butter. For decades, this inscription had been cited as coming from Psalms 9:12 of the King James Bible.
Devil. See?
Yeah, I know. Well, shocking. However, the King James Bible actually reads, "When he maketh the inquisition for blood, he remembereth them. He forgetteth not the cry of the humble."
But I mean, really, isn't it essentially saying the same thing?
Yeah.
I don't think it is, but whatever. The biblical quote left behind at the Broussard crime scene was actually taken from the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, which had originally misquoted the verse.
Okay, this person has read Uncle Tom's Cabin, but maybe not necessarily the Bible, is what you're saying.
That is what I just said, yes.
Just want to be clear.
Other facts of the
crime scene. The big ones, the next one, really, that the colonel has to just shout out all the time in my times of trial and tribulation, because as you know, it's not easy being the colonel. But Psalm 9:13,
it's Lord, not easy being the rest of us.
Lord, see how my enemies persecute me. Have mercy and lift me up from the gates of death. Or if you go with the New Living Translation, Lord, have mercy on me. See how my enemies torment me. Snatch me back from the jaws of death.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's
are you done there, Billy Graham? Can we move forward?
Well, in this one, Psalm 25:19, it reminds me, this one always brings you to mind. Consider my enemies, O Lord, for they are many, and they hate me with vicious hatred. How's that?
Oh, Oral Roberts found the Bible app, so good for you. Settle down.
No, I'm just saying, the biblical, something to think about.
Other facts of the Broussard crime scene were soon sensationalized by the regional media. The El Paso Herald, surprisingly of El Paso, Texas, called the murders a sacrifice and noted that the youngest victims had been found with their fingers splayed and secured with pieces of paper and pens.
It's hard to write when you've been brained with an axe.
Yeah.
Yes.
It does affect your handwriting.
The words "human five" were found scribbled at the crime scene as well. The newspaper wasted little time in blaming voodoo worshippers for the murders.
Sure sounds like it to me.
Despite being behind bars at the time of the Broussard murders, Clementine Barnabé confessed to having a hand in the killings. Clementine, whose demeanor and behavior was deemed odd by investigators and newspapermen alike, also claimed that she was responsible for more murders than the public knew about. Charles, would you like to bring us home?
Let me get in here and wrap this one up for us, Timmy.
Do you know where we are?
We are at page 6. Now, Clementine ultimately confessed to her involvement in the murder of some 35 people between 1911 and 1912. She was a busy little Clementine. 17 of these victims were reportedly murdered by Clementine herself. After her confession, Clementine was examined by several doctors, most of whom deduced that she was perfectly sane. Now, due to the severity of these crimes, Clementine was sent to the infamous Angola State Penitentiary near the Louisiana State Capitol of Baton Rouge.
Oh, that's that penitentiary that's always on locked up.
Yeah. John Grisham. Yeah. It's always in a John Grisham book, too. Now, on July 31, 1913, Clementine tried to escape from prison but was captured by officers the same day. Now, for whatever reason, this escape attempt was forgotten, and in 1918, Clementine was given the job of a cane cutter which he seemed exceptionally experienced.
I was going to say, I don't know that you really, you know, give an axe murderer the job of cane cutter, because I have to assume they need to, at the very least, carry a scythe.
Yeah, I would think a scythe or maybe a machete or whatever. Now, Clementine was allowed to work outside with minimal observation. Now, 5 years later, on Saturday, August 28, 1923, Clementine was allowed to leave Angola due to years of good behavior.
Wow. So, 5 years.
She did 15 or 10 years. Let's see.
Yeah.
When was she, when
like
was she put there?
People, so.
35 murders. Well,
1913,
She made her bed. She made her bed. And
yeah, she did about 5 years.
Out of her cell.
No, yeah. She did 10 years. Well,
yeah, 10
no,
years. She did 10.
Maybe, yeah, around then, yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
Now, the story of Clementine Barnabé remained a mystery until a few years ago. In 2013, a woman came forward and claimed she had visited a 103-year-old great-grandmother in 1985. And during that visit, the pair were joined by another woman who told them all a story about a forgotten string of voodoo murders. The same year after the mysterious, storyteller died. Ooh. Attendees at the funeral noticed that a youthful picture of the woman matched newspaper photographs of the serial killer Clementine Barnabé.
Dun, dun, dun.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah.
She was a, that yes. church. I don't know if it, I thought I put it in the script, but maybe I didn't. But the church that she belonged to was the Church of the Sacrifice. So
okay, but I mean, I have a question. So I mean, is that the only thing that? Because I didn't see anything here that said that necessarily, like solidly. Tied this to voodoo. So did they just say, oh, well,
no, she was a,
there was a lot of blood.
Yeah, no, she was a member of a church. It was called the Church of the Sacrifice. It was a voodoo-based church. And
that seems
like a
key fact.
That's where that they tied it to voodoo. But, again, it was, you know, anything that was unexplained, like murders... in Louisiana was often just credited to voodoo, but
well,
she did
much like here
to, she did practice voodoo, and she in the churches she belonged to, the Church of the Sacrifice, was a voodoo based church. But I guess like you, Brandy, the thing that kind of has me scratching my head is. I could never really figure out why they let her go. I mean,
good behavior.
Well, I know good behavior. But technically, usually a serial killer is not let out of jail for good behavior. But in her
case,
she's
a woman.
Well, at that point,
she's a woman.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, she's a woman. And that's probably why they were like, oh, well, you know, she's learned her lesson. She's going to be a good girl. And she probably went out and, you know, chopped up about 18 other families that they don't know anything about.
Well, I think the
just, you know.
The implication is that she used some of her voodoo magic to get released. But,
right.
But again, you know. It's,
to kill the other people.
Yeah. So.
Well maybe whatever. She just was a, you know, maybe she would like the devil, you know. 10 years of her is just enough. It's like, yeah, I don't care what we release upon society. Just get out of here. I don't want to be locked up
maybe.
With this woman anymore.
Brandy, what's your final thoughts on Clementine Barnabé, the voodoo killer?
I want to know what happened to her dad, who was sitting there in jail with her. Did they ever let him out, or did they go ahead and kill him?
No, he was drunk. He was drunk during the trial.
As he should be. I don't understand why that's a huge problem, but whatever. You know, not cool. Not cool at all. Not cool to lie and send your dad to prison. People look down
not,
on that.
But, you know, he probably had it coming.
Well, who amongst us does not?
You shouldn't confess to true. Murders while you're in an argument with your wife.
Right.
That's the lesson.
When you get in the throes of passion, you got to watch what you say. You got to watch what you say because you get you're imprinting. You get women into this vulnerable, hyper-conscious state, Timmy. Mm-hmm. If you know, I got a chapter about this in the book. You take women to a different astral plane, Timmy.
I see.
And then all of a sudden,
oh my God!
And sometimes, you know, if you do it right, they can read your mind. You don't even have to say things out loud. But that's for the more advanced. You know, the whole thing about how to make love to a woman, Timmy. I think I'm going to turn it into like Scientology. Mm-hmm. You can get your certificate for, you know, your apprentice loveologist, you know, apprentice love maker, so to speak, devil. And then as you get more evolved and read more of the Colonel's teachings, you move higher up in a love making hierarchy. What do you think about that, devil?
So, Colonel, what's your final thoughts on Clementine Barnabé, the voodoo murderer?
Well, I think she was just a little misunderstood. And, you know, you don't know what kind of things that could have happened leading up to these things. You know, but I don't believe someone named Clementine could perpetuate such crimes, Timmy. Clementine is a sweet name.
You don't think she did it?
No. Oh, my darling Clementine.
What's the name of an orange?
No, she
was a darling. No.
Darling she was a darling Clementine. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my darling Clementine.
Yeah, Lucy can hear you. You're upsetting her.
You have chopped up people and run away. Oh, my darling Clementine.
Can I also tell you that my child dribbled some blue Kool-Aid onto my dog, and now she has this big blue streak on her head.
Oh, she's a Smurf dog.
Yeah.
Kind of. Not happy about it.
Okay, we would like to thank all of you who support us on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, and really, why wouldn't you, for support this fine entertainment, you can go to patreon.com/historydweebs, all one word. That's patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or Colonel?
Just a wee little bit, Timmy. Just the tip, so to speak.
And we are in the process of updating our Patreon list to thank all of you who support the program. We're very, very grateful. But this week we're going to give a shout out to four of our newer sponsors on Patreon.
Yeah.
Colonel, you want to run through those names?
We got the very funny Mrs. Goss, Rachel Goss, Anna Kaufman. Possibly the daughter of Andy Kaufman. We don't know that, but she sounds an awful lot like him. Aaron Kukamila, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Shelby Pelegi.
Great. And I want to give a shout out to a new member of the History Dweebs group on Facebook. We'd encourage all of you to join us at History Dweebs, the podcast on Facebook. And that's Kimberly Jones, one of our newer members. So welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard, Kimberly.
All right.
Well, until next week, Timmy.
Yes. We'll see y'all next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.